Hey, comic book fans, Lauren Lester here, the voice of many of your favorite superheroes like Green Lantern, Iron Fist, and of course, Robin and Nightwing. And you're listening to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life.
Hey there, funny book fans. Welcome to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. I'm your host, Joe Stuber. And you are on the bonus plan this week. Yes, you are. 2 days, two amazing episodes of Comic Book Central celebrating the legacy of our favorite boy wonder, Robin. Now, on yesterday's episode, I spoke with the one and only Burt Ward, who brought Dick Grayson, a.k.a. Robin, to life on the 1960s Batman television series. So if you haven't heard that Bat Chat, after today's episode, you definitely want to go back and download or stream that interview. Really cool time chatting with Burt Ward. We talked about a lot of things. So I'm actually going to be seeing Burt in a few days. More on that in just a moment. Today, the voice of Robin and Nightwing from Batman the Animated Series and the upcoming feature film Batman and Harley Quinn, Lauren Lester. He's going to be dropping by in just a few minutes. Man, this year, we've been celebrating the 25th anniversary of Batman the Animated Series right here in Comic Book Central in a big, big way. Earlier in the year, chatted with Mark Hamill, of course, the Joker from the series, the Joker's gal pal and partner in crime, the original Harley Quinn, Arlene Sorkin, she was here. Harley's partner, Poison Ivy, on the series, Diane Pershing, she stopped by as well. And today, man, Robin, Nightwing, Lauren Lester, he's going to be here. Live action Robin, Burt Ward yesterday. Animated Robin, Lauren Lester coming your way today. A lot of good stuff. Man, this is fun. As I mentioned on yesterday's show, two huge events for those gents coming up. That's why I wanted to get these episodes out to you right away. This Monday, August 14th, Fathom Events is hosting a one-night-only theatrical showing of Batman and Harley Quinn, featuring Lauren Lester as Nightwing, Kevin Conroy as Batman, and The Big Bang Theory's Melissa Rauch as Harley Quinn. It's going to be a great flick. If you can see it in the theater, that's the way to do it, man. One night only in theaters, Monday, August 14th. Check out fathomevents.com to see if the film is going to be playing in a theater near you. The following day, you can get it on digital, August 15th, August 29th, Blu-ray and DVD. So a lot of different ways to catch the flick. And of course, August 18th through the 20th at the Mohegan Sun in Connecticut, it's Terrificon. It's Burt Ward along with Catwoman Lee Meriwether. They're going to be there paying tribute to the late, great Adam West. The Batman 66 film, it's going to be playing there. They've got the four Bat vehicles from the film and the TV series. That'll be cool. I'll be there as usual, taking Comic Book Central on the road to bring a lot of interviews back for you listeners. It's Terrificon.com. That's where you go to get tickets, to find out more information about the show, all the guest information. Again, if you didn't hear yesterday's show, after my chat with Lauren today, go back, check it out, because I've also got a Terrificon preview on that episode with the man behind Terrificon, Mitch Halleck. So check that out. All right, terrific show yesterday, terrific show today. Glad you're all here hanging out in the lair with us. Check this out, and then I will be right back to rap about Robin with the amazingly talented Lauren Lester. At the age of 11, after appearing in a school play, Lauren knew he wanted to be an actor. A native of Los Angeles, he began his professional acting career as a teenager. Early roles included feature films like Rock and Roll High School and appearances on such TV shows as Charles in Charge, Gimme a Break, and The Facts of Life. Now, around this time, Lauren also stepped behind the microphone and became one of the industry's most prolific voiceover artists in commercials, video games, animated series, so many other things. And action adventure and superhero fans recognize him as Barbecue from G.I. Joe, Rick Gordon, son of Flash Gordon on Defenders of the Earth, Iron Fist from Avengers, Earth's Mightiest Heroes, and Green Lantern from Batman the Brave and the Bold. But this week we are celebrating the character Lauren is most identified with, Dick Grayson, Robin the Boy Wonder on Batman the Animated Series. In 1992, Lauren voiced a version of Grayson the fans hadn't really seen brought to life at that point. This was a college-age Robin, poised to step out from under the shadow of the Bat and become the crime fighter known as Nightwing. Created in 1984 by writer Marv Wolfman and artist George Perez, Nightwing had never before appeared in live action or animation. And in 1997, Lauren debuted the grown-up Grayson in the episode You Scratch My Back, and the following year he got to ratchet up the drama quite a bit and show why Nightwing split off from Batman in the episode Old Wounds.
I thought we had the same goals.
Things change. I changed. The game's over, Batman. I quit.
Robin, wait.
To date, Lauren has made appearances in over 200 TV episodes, numerous stage plays, countless video games and animated projects, and most recently, he reunited with Kevin Conroy as the dynamic duo of Batman and Nightwing once again team up to take on the demented duo of Harley Quinn and Poison Ivy in the feature film Batman and Harley Quinn.
Ivy and the Floronic Man
were up to
questionable activities.
We need help.
Harley Quinn reporting for duty, sir!
God help us.
Where can I find your BFF, Poison Ivy?
I can help you find her, but you're gonna put in a good word for me with the parole board.
No.
Right now, I want to welcome in a star of both stage and screen. And for 25 years, he has been the primary voice we hear when we're watching both Robin and Nightwing. His latest epic bat tale is Batman and Harley Quinn. And we will soon see him in front of the camera once again in the upcoming sci-fi comedy series, The Orville. A big welcome to Lauren Lester. Lauren, welcome to Comic Book Central.
Oh, thanks, Joe. Pleasure to be here.
We hear you, we see you. I mean, you're everywhere. And now we're going to, tell us about The Orville before we get to the superhero stuff. We got some sci-fi stuff coming up here, right?
Oh, this show is going to be fantastic. I was just at San Diego Comic-Con, and I went to the panel, and they showed quite a bit of the pilot episode, and it looks and sounds like Star Trek, you know, and that's what they were going for. So fans are really going to love that. And they're going to love the fact that there's a whole comic spin on it. Cause you know, you've got Seth MacFarlane, you know, who really is bringing a new kind of comedy to this too. You know, some of it is his usual, you know, very funny jokes, but there's also a lot of social satire, and particularly the episode I'm in has a lot of social satire, and it's very, very clever and very well written. And he wrote the script that I did.
Oh, okay. So he wrote that episode. I mean, how do you know what number episode it's going to come in yet? Or
yes, episode 7.
Okay, yes, 7. So the Orville premieres September 10th, I believe, on Fox. So we'll get that. So watch pilot,
right.
Watch all that, and then a few episodes in, episode 7, we're going to get to you. That's going to be pretty cool. Hey, he's Mr. Pop Culture, right? So I'm guessing, and it's an hour long show.
Yes, it's an hour long show. So it's a I don't want to say dramedy because there's more comedy in it than drama, but
right.
There are dramatic moments, you know.
I can't imagine Seth MacFarlane being in it, and it's not so strange to go drama. I get that's the thing. I mean, you've got some story playing out, but I'm guessing it's just a lot of really cool jokes, a lot of very cool Star Trek references, a lot, you know, all these different things. Were you? Are you a Trekker?
Oh, I absolutely am. I went to the very first Star Trek convention. I was there for the very first one, and Star Wars had just come out, and so. William Shatner and the entire cast was there, and William Shatner was saying, well, you know, there's this Star Wars movie coming out. Why don't they have a Star Trek movie? And of course everybody went crazy.
Yeah.
That's what we wanted. And then a short time later it happened. They realized they could make a lot of money off of Star Trek.
So what do we need to know about the Orville? What can you tell us so far? And what can you tell us about your character, your episode? I mean, I know they, you know, hush-hush secrecy. But, I mean, it is pretty much, it's kind of, I mean, it's like set on a sort of a starship. I mean, it's supposed to be like kind of like a, is it a spoof? Is it a parody? Is it an homage? How would you describe it?
Oh, definitely homage.
Okay.
It's absolutely an homage. It's not a Spaceballs kind of comedy spoof. It's not like that at all. And they made it very clear that's not what they wanted.
Closer to
they
Galaxy Quest, maybe?
Yes, I'd say closer to Galaxy Quest, but there was really I can't remember a dramatic moment from Galaxy Quest. To be honest with you. I mean, it was just like nonstop laugh. That's not what this show is.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you how impressed I am with Seth MacFarlane, because he does everything on this show. He's starring, of course, as the Captain Kirk kind of character, but he's the showrunner. He's written a lot of the episodes. They bring to him, while he's sitting there studying his lines, they bring to him swatches of costumes that they're building, so to get his approval.
Wow.
And they show him sets they're building, and he watches every take of every moment and has input. And it's just he does the whole thing like Mr. Cool, like he is. I mean, that's the guy that he portrays in public. That's the guy he is on the set. I mean, in his position, he could be any kind of person and, you know, instill fear in people to get them to do what they want. But it's the exact opposite. He is just he's just a collaborator on every level. And I was so impressed and so delighted I got to be on the show. So as far as my episode is concerned, the episode is a kind of a social satire about an American Idol kind of planet, where people vote up or down on whether people live or not, depending on their behavior. And I think that's probably all I can say about it, because there's a lot of twists and turns. But that's the premise of my episode.
Is this kind of like the Roman Colosseum, but if
yes,
you know, the
exactly.
American Idol judges, if like Randy and Paula show up? And Simon
exactly,
Cowell.
Except they're not voting with their thumbs like the emperor. They're voting with their cell phones or their iPads, whatever they have, you know,
whatever little gadget they have. Okay, I'm really stoked
right.
for this thing. This seems like it's going to be goofy enough and silly enough and fun enough that it seems like it's going to hit on all the sweet spots that all of us nerd sci-fi geeks love.
It'll satisfy the big time. And like I said, I saw a lot of the pilot. And a lot of it had the visuals and the music that, you know, harkens back to any one of the great Star Trek movies.
Oh, it's going to be fantastic. And speaking of nerd, you're a nerd yourself, right? You grew up watching, I mean, to talk about Seth MacFarlane, Mayor Adam West on Family Guy, the late, great Adam West. You grew up watching Adam West, didn't you?
Yes, I did. One of my great regrets is that I never got to meet him.
And all the comic conventions you did, Oh,
no,
wow.
No.
It's
funny because people think that I've done a lot of comic conventions, but the truth is I've only really started doing them during the last couple of years. Particularly this last year was very crazy, leading up to the premiere of the Batman and Harley Quinn movie in San Diego. I've been all over the country, but did not do any, shows with them. I got to meet the monkeys, which was fantastic.
That's awesome.
But Adam West was not there, and that was a great regret. And the episodes he did of Batman the Animated Series, I was not in those episodes, so I didn't get to hang out with him.
That's amazing. I mean, that's unbelievable. So, well, I mean, but his influence on you is certainly felt, though, because especially I'm guessing that TV series with Robin as well and Burt Ward.
Tremendous influence on me. I lived for that show. I was a very little kid and took it very seriously. You know, I didn't get the whole tongue-in-cheek thing. And so on Tuesday, I'd have a cliffhanger, right?
Yeah.
And I would be terrified that by Wednesday there there would be a death. You know, that Batman or Robin would be killed. But of course, that never happened or even came close to happening. So I took it very seriously and of course, had all the as much merchandise as I could get my hands on and afford and had it next to my bed. I had a nightstand that was covered in Batman stuff. And so when the opportunity came up to audition for I guess they call it BTAS, don't they? I don't have to say Batman the Animated Series.
BTAS.
That's what Bruce Timm always says. He says BTAS. I was over the moon, elated to think that I had the chance to be on that show when I got the part. Wow! So it was a huge part of my childhood.
Do you still have any of your merch you had from when you were a kid?
I have it all.
No way. Oh, see, I love these stories because that's happened a couple of times. Because sometimes you go, oh, I got rid of it, or you know, whatever. I love hearing that actors and actresses kept their stuff.
I kept the stuff, but you know what? It was played with, and I didn't keep the boxes. And funny, my mother used to say, keep the boxes. I didn't understand why.
Your mom said that?
My mom said, keep the boxes, yes.
Wow.
And, yeah, she's a kind of a depression kid and believes in keeping everything, basically. So,
well.
So she said, keep the boxes. I didn't, and I played with the stuff. And, of course, unless it's in pristine condition in a box, it has no value except the sentimental value that I attribute to it.
But to me, that's the value. To me, that is the value.
You're absolutely
you
right.
Know? And granted, I still have some stuff in boxes. Look, I think I have your action figure of you in a box. That's a full disclosure. I do have stuff that I've kept in box. But the stuff from a kid, like all my Mego figures and everything, I mean, that's all played with. And to me, that is the value of I had fun with this stuff when I was a kid.
You're absolutely right, and later on, when I was an adult and not playing with toys anymore, I did keep them in the box, so I do have stuff from BTAZ that's never been touched, which is, you know, one day my children will inherit.
You can be an adult and still play with toys. That's fine. Look, this is a safe place.
Okay,
there's no judgment.
Right.
There's no judgment. Your action figures, I know you've got them all set up there. You're playing with them right now, right?
All right. You taught me.
Did you watch the cartoons as well? Because talk about voice acting. I'm just sort of curious about inspirations and getting into it. Did you watch like the cartoons with Casey Kasem and Burt Ward
you know,
did the voice as
you
well?
You know, I never watched any of those shows.
Okay.
I watched the animated Star Trek, so I was really into that. But
okay.
I didn't watch the Batman cartoons.
What was do you recall like your first interest in acting? Because this was like really – this is like grade school almost, right?
Absolutely, grade school, and I have on my Facebook page a picture of me with a cosplay guy dressed as Cat in the Hat from one of the Comic Cons I did recently, and I told the story of how that was the thing that made me become an actor. I was cast as the Cat in the Hat in a stage adaptation of that in grade school.
Nice,
and that set me for life. It said, "That's it. That's what I want to do."
Lead role right off the bat. What
yeah,
was it about
yeah.
the, was it the, just the performing? Was it people focused on you? Was it audience reaction? What was it that
audience,
said, I got to do this?
Audience reaction. Absolutely. I was not an athletic kid. I was, overweight. And so although I tried, you know, to participate in all the group sports, I was just no good at it. And the kids really tormented me about that. And here was something that I could do that practically nobody else could do that I knew of. So it was really a matter of, wow, I have this skill. I have this skill. I can't shoot a three-pointer, but I have this skill. So that was probably the main thing.
How did you discover that? Was this in gym class or something? I mean, this sort of led to the professional, like getting paid gigs.
Well, I do have a funny story about gym class. I can tell you.
Is this your gym coach?
Really,
okay.
But, oh, you know this one about my gym coach?
I do a little homework.
yeah. So that was in high school. That was later on.
Okay.
I already knew by the time.
Well, give us your funny story. I don't know the funny story yet. So give us that one first.
Oh, well, by the time I got to high school, I absolutely knew I wanted to be an actor. But I was still forced because of the rules to take a gym class. And of course the other boys were just tormenting me mercilessly because I was no good at anything, any of the sports. And so they put me in what was called, well, my mom intervened because it was just really just a terrible situation. So she intervened, and in middle school, she was able to get me out so I could take typing, which was fantastic. I've had that skill now since middle school. But in high school, they wouldn't let her do that. They said I had to be in what was called adaptive PE, which was pretty much all of the kids who were, you know, whatever, for whatever reason, they could not be socially mixed.
Athletically challenged.
Other kids. Exactly. Let's just put it that way. Challenged on every level, you know, mental, physical, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So here I was, you know, without any of those disabilities, which, you know, I'm very grateful for, but still in with all these other kids. And the coach of that class said, did you ever think about being an actor? And I said, oh, yeah, all the time, ever since, you know, grade school. And his son happened to be taking not taking, his son happened to have an agent and was going out on commercial calls. And so the coach introduced me to the agent, and the agent signed me, and the rest is history. And that's actually the agent I had that started me on voiceovers.
Oh, wow. Good to grow up in Cali, though, right? If you're thinking about acting. I don't think that would have happened in, like, Wisconsin or something like that.
Well, that's exactly the first thing I say to people, because usually at the cons, at least one or two people come up and they very eagerly want to know how they can get into voiceover. And the first thing I say is, move from Wisconsin or wherever.
Be born in California.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Oh, that's funny. Well, you know, like you say, that, you know, sometimes it's circumstances, you know, all these different things. They lead to sometimes what they need to lead to. Okay, so when did the voiceover stuff start? Was that pretty early on, or how did that? Because I know you had a lot of guest roles too. I mean, we saw you on Facts of Life for a long time, mm-hmm. and so how did all that
was actually? Yeah, that was all later. The first jobs I got were in commercials.
Okay.
And that's how I joined the union and became a professional actor and was doing commercials. But this agent that I signed with had departments covering everything. That doesn't happen anymore now, except for like the huge agencies like ICM and William Morris. Once you're signed with them and you're a celebrity, you're in every category. But back then, it was true for actors who were just journeyman actors like me. There was an agency that could cover everything. So he covered film, TV, even print jobs, commercial, and he had a fantastic voiceover agent who was running his voiceover department, who then later on opened his own independent voiceover agency. And after the first few commercials, the very first voiceover I went on, I booked, and the rest was history. From there was a Hanna-Barbera after school special. And from there on, I just continued to go out on the voiceovers and book G.I. Joe through that agency and Defenders of the Earth through that agency. And so that launched my voiceover career from a very early time. So I was only 16 when I did my first voiceover.
Wow. Now, we just recently lost legendary voice director Wally Burr. Unfortunate, but
yes.
You just look at all the work that he produced over the years. Did he cast you for some of that initial stuff? Or
yes.
Like your first big?
Yes.
Is that G.I. Joe?
He cast me in G.I. Joe and Defenders of the Earth. And I owe him, will forever owe him, because that's where my career got launched. And it was because I think, I had those credits that I was given the chance to audition for Batman when it came along.
We hear so many stories, too, about just the detail that went into his voice direction and things like that. Can you talk a little bit about working with him and just how he was able to get those performances? Very different voice director, I guess, than most.
Well, the people that I worked with, particularly on G.I. Joe, were already long time professionals, like people like Michael Bell, and so they more wanted more to express themselves the way they wanted to, didn't want to be imposed on, let's say, by Wally Burr. I'm a different kind of person. I like a director who knows exactly what he wants. I love it, unless it's something crazy that to me is completely off the charts and doesn't make any sense. And I work with some directors like that. But Wally Burr was not. Wally Burr knew what he wanted, so he would keep going until he got what he wanted. Mm-hmm. And I actually appreciate that and like working that way. I know a lot of the other actors, had a beef about that because the sessions were so long. And one of the reasons that we went on strike was because these sessions were so long. We wanted to have a session that was no longer than 4 hours, and we won that in the in striking back then. I think it was 1987.
How long were the sessions?
They could go on forever. I mean, they could just keep going and going and going.
I mean, we're talking like 10, 12 hours longer?
No. I would say,
Six,
7, 8 hours, in there, which is.
But
just,
for your voice, just, if you're, yeah, especially a lot of the action show, you're doing G.I. Joe, Defenders of the Earth. I mean, a lot of that is yelling and screaming and duck and cover and.
Right. And it was only a half hour show. It was only 22 minutes, actually, when you come right down to 22 minutes. And, in film work and TV work, they have to set up lights and they have to do all kinds of things to prepare for the shots. So you can understand why that would run as long as it does. But, you know, doing a 22-minute show, you really shouldn't be in there for more than 4 hours.
Yeah.
And so, and most of the time we found with that restriction, they didn't even need that. Most of the Batman episodes I did were you know, recorded in way less than that.
Andrea Romano, very different voice structure, I would imagine.
Oh,
so.
Oh yeah. And but she too knows exactly what she wants, but it's a different approach. She'll let the actors go on as much freedom as we can have, which is terrific. And we used to do it like a radio show, you know, we were all there back in those days. That doesn't happen anymore, but the whole cast was there. Whenever I worked with Mark Hamill, he was there. Kevin, of course, was there every single time. And all the movie stars and TV stars who did the villains, they were always there. So we bounced off of each other as though we were in a stage play or a radio play. And she would let us go on, you know, for as many pages, you know, until there was a technical glitch or she did heard something that she didn't like and would come in and be very clear. This is what we need here. You know?
Yeah. I want to get into some of the specifics with that too. Just to stay with some of the 80s stuff though. I looked at your resume too, and it's interesting because it mentions Australian accent, British, English, French, German, Irish, Italian, New York, Russian, Scandinavian, Scottish, Southern, and New England. How do you develop all those? And can you give us a little bit of the New England with barbecue from G.I. Joe?
Yes, and that's a funny story.
And were you inspired by Pepperidge Farm commercials at all?
Well, the character breakdown when we auditioned said they wanted a Boston accent, and I have to confess, you did not see Boston on that list. I really don't do the Boston accent. The people who do the Boston accent are brilliant at it, and so I don't really put that on my resume because I think the people who really do it way better than me. So I gave it a shot and I said, well, I can't really do the Boston, but I certainly can do the Maine accent and maybe they'll buy that. And looks like they did. And remember, no one is half the battle.
Oh, you harken back to our beloved PSAs, the fire safety PSAs. You're teaching kids fire safety. I love it.
Oh my God. Isn't it funny? Because people, what I see, you know, thousands of people at the Comic Cons and the people who come up and are G.I. Joe fans, the first thing they talk about is that fire safety PSA. Isn't that funny?
I love that whole era, like even 70s and 80s. Cause like with our cartoons, we always like learn something.
Yeah.
Even the Super Friends, like they were teaching us how to make arts and crafts. They were teaching us how to be safe. They were, look both ways before crossing, you know? So I just love that era. I think that's such a lost art too. Did you work with dialect coaches to get to these other things, or is you just like through osmosis, like watching a bunch of stuff?
No, it's one of those natural skills that I have. I can do that. And also I can. I don't speak any foreign languages, but if it's written out phonetically, I can sound like a native speaker in the foreign languages. So it's a It's just a particular skill I have.
Now, before we get to Batman the Animated Series, speaking of Batman the Animated Series, the great Diane Pershing, not the first time you worked with her on Batman. You mentioned it there, Defenders of the Earth.
That's right. She was the computer voice she was in every episode of Defenders of the Earth.
She was the computer voice, but she was first. Who on? I mean, do you know that little bit of trivia?
No.
Okay. She became the computer voice in that first episode because your character, Rick Gordon, was trying to save somebody in that first episode, somebody near and dear to his heart. He was trying to save Del Arden. His mom, Diane Pershing, was Del Arden. Well, in the original Flash Gordon.
I didn't know if you
knew that part of the history, or because I know your scenes, you come in and you're... You know, it's very brief that she's in. I mean, it's very, very brief that she's Dale in that first episode, and then she's the computer voice. Yeah, but it was like her essence.
And does the mother ever come back in the show? I don't remember that.
No, she was Dale Arden in the original series in the original 70s Flash or 80 up to 80, and then they kill her off. For the spoiler alert, they kill her off in the first episode. You tried to save her, but her essence is like downloaded into this computer. So Rick kind of like has his mom with him the whole time, even though it's like this new computer thing that he built.
Wow.
Okay, so I didn't
have no memory of that at all.
That's okay. I talked to Diane Pershing about it. I go back way back. So, I can't remember what I had for lunch last week, but, I'm always asking people, can you remember this episode from 30 years ago?
Diane and I got to do Phoenix Comic Con together. We have a couple of other Comic Cons coming up. I think Grand Rapids and can't remember where else. But it was a wonderful reunion with her. I hadn't seen her in a long time, but we had worked together so many times in the past. It was great to see her again.
She mentioned that because that was something that surprised me too. And you mentioned it too, is that both of you haven't done Comic-Con. This was like her first one. Like she hadn't done them. She just started doing them. And now it's so cool because we get to see Kevin Conroy is jumping in. You have 25th anniversary of Batman, the animated series. You like the three of you have doing several. I know you and Kevin are doing a bunch of conventions together. What's the fan reaction?
Yeah,
like when
and
you
the
got
one in Phoenix, when you, the one in Phoenix, all three of us were there. Yeah.
Yeah. And so what's it like? What's the feedback you get from the fans when the three of you show up and you're talking about Batman 25th anniversary and we get to see all the characters again together?
Well, I learned when I started doing the cons how much this show meant to people. I don't just mean like on a, just a regular fan, oh, I love that show, but how important it was to I get the story over and over again. People say the show was on right after school. I would race home from school. And if I had a bad day at school or if I was a latchkey kid, a lot of them were latchkey kids, if no parents were home, they would race home, watch the show, and it was the one thing they could count on and made them feel good about themselves and about what was ever going on in their lives. And if they tell me these stories with tears in their eyes. It really just meant so much to them. And I didn't realize that until I started doing the Comic Cons and meeting the fans in person. And I never get tired of hearing that. I hear it all the time, but never gets old hearing that.
What do you recall from your initial audition, finding out about the series and then kind of going into audition for the part of Robin, of Dick Grayson / Robin / Nightwing?
It happened just like every other job, which was you get an audition, you get some copy, which is the script. We call it copy when it's a little piece of the, I know you know that, but for people listening, we get a piece of the copy and we prepare an audition and go into our agency where they have a recording booth and they send off their clients. And then the producers listen and then they have a callback and they bring in the people who they think are, approximately right for it. And then they have another audition, another callback where they really narrow it down. So I don't know how many people were finally narrowed down. I know I went through three auditions, but I know it was finally narrowed down. And the copy was actually lines from a Popeye cartoon. it was about Bluto, something about Bluto. So they really wanted to, I don't know if they were trying to keep it really confidential or they just wanted to see how we would handle non-Batman dialogue. I don't know.
So you get the script, but do you know you were auditioning for Dick Grayson and reading this Popeye script?
Yeah.
Okay, so you're trying to read a Popeye script as you would if you were Robin.
Exactly.
Got it. Okay.
Exactly. And it wasn't per se like a page torn from a Popeye script. It's just it was about Bluto and stopping him from doing something bad. So in the same way
as if Bluto were a bad villain.
Exactly. That would have been fun.
Yeah. Classic comic crossover.
So that was how I got the part. And, Kevin and I both talk about this is we were both doing a lot of other stuff. And so when we got the job, it was, of course, I was really thrilled because I was already a lover of the Batman universe. But it was just a great job. It was a great job. And when it was over, it was, I'm really sorry that didn't go on. I wish that went on more. And then we moved on to other things. And neither of us had any idea that we would be still talking about this 25 years later and would become the phenom that it did. We knew at the time it was a great show, a really unusual show. But for us, it was just a really good job, a really good gig. A good gig, man, as the musicians say.
What was your approach to the character then? Obviously, you knew the background, at least the very least from the Batman 66 show. Did you have any of the comic book knowledge going in? And how did you approach the character? Because the reason I ask is because it was a different take ultimately on, obviously, first Nightwing. You're the first Nightwing ever. Mm-hmm. But also like a different take on Robin, an older Robin, almost at that breaking point right between Robin and Nightwing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's when they started it.
Yeah, so how did you approach the character? How did you, like, what did you bring into it? And what did you, like, how did you sort of approach voicing, just even in that initial audition phase?
Well, people are always surprised to learn that I knew nothing about comic books, because I was just not a comic book guy. Didn't dislike comic books. It just wasn't my thing. So I knew really nothing about it coming in except the TV show that I watched. And I knew by that point that was a spoof. So I wasn't going to go that far in that direction. But I couldn't help but be influenced by Burt Ward, you know, the kind of excitement and eagerness that he brought to the character. So that really influenced how I did the Robin voice. Then when I became Nightwing, and by then I had learned about the comic book world of Dick Grayson, and I thought, well, if he becomes Nightwing, he has to be closer to Batman than he is closer to what he was before. So I just took a cue from Kevin's pacing and Kevin's voice and said, well, I think Dick Grayson would be trying to imitate that or emulate that. So I lowered my voice. I was less, when he was Robin, he was always, what are we going to do, Batman? You know, Nightwing never said that. Nightwing would say, I know what we're going to do, Batman. I know what we're going to do. And if you're not going to go along with me, then I'll do it myself. So the transition from Robin to Nightwing was a much cooler headed guy.
I think that's what we love about that animated series so much, is that we do get to see that arc. You usually don't get to see character progression too much in animated series. Because you never know when they're going to show, what episode order they're going to come in. But it's so nice we get to see that linear development of the character. It's interesting. Yeah,
and in BTAS, they start it. You know, my favorite episode, Old Wounds, you know, it's that's actually later on when I'm Nightwing, but earlier on, there's so much dramatic tension between Batman and Dick Grayson when he's Robin. They're really setting up what's going to come later, which is the transition to Nightwing.
Yeah, it's the scripts are brilliant as they go through. I'm going to talk about some of those episodes that you mentioned. You mentioned one of the ones I wanted to ask you about. But you mentioned doing this as a radio play. Look, all the actors I've talked to have been involved in the series. They talk about just the who's who of Hollywood coming in and out of the door. Was there anyone in particular? I mean, obviously Mark Hamill, getting to work with him had to be awesome. But was there anybody specifically that you geeked out about that you, they're in studio. Whoa. Okay. This is going to be a very different day at work today.
Every single day. Every day I came in and I would have no idea who was going to be there. And, walking in and seeing these people who I'd grown up with and watched in film and TV, and I was fans of these people, every single day would be a geek out.
Yeah, I mean, it just had so many people. I mean, I think of, you know, like Ed Asner coming in and Ephraim Zimbalist Jr.
Yes.
I mean, these are like,
yes,
probably people that you're like, what in the world are they doing? They're doing an animated series? Like, but it seemed like everybody wanted to be on. This was the show everyone wanted to be on, right?
Yes. There's no question about it. And one particular actor who was starring in a TV series at the time came in and looked sort of like the deer in the headlights when he first got there. And at one of the breaks, he said to me, I don't know how you guys do this. You can only use your voice. It's really amazing.
Who was that?
That's really... I don't want to say.
Oh, but the, okay.
And he was terrific. I'm not saying that he was, that he bombed out in the part. He did great. But
just such a different world.
Confidentially. Yeah. And so all of these people who were used to using every tool at their disposal had only one tool to use. And so I think it was a new world for them. But, a good actor is a good actor is a good actor. And so when people say, I want to become a voice actor, I would say to them, well, you have to be an actor first. And if you use your voice and you do voiceover, that's great. But you have to understand, it's not just doing funny voices. It's being a really good actor. And because all of these people were truly wonderful actors, they were able to adapt to the technique of using a microphone only.
Well, that's what I'm curious about, too, is that as an actor, because you've done stage, you've done TV, you've done feature films, mm-hmm. and you've done voiceover. So I get you like get that whole space.
Yes.
Are you a sit-down voice actor, or are you like Hamill, where you're just all over the place, or are you somewhere in between?
No, Hamill's the only one who would stand up during the recording sessions. Everybody else was seated, but he liked standing up. Nowadays, when we're recording by ourselves, and 99% of the time we record by ourselves, especially mm-hmm. if it's an interactive game, they will have us standing up.
Just for the action parts. Probably a little bit more for the action.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's such
you
a
really
lost art anymore. I miss those old radio play. It sounded like that was easier for you to get the emotion, because if you're acting off a fellow work, because some of those episodes, and we'll talk about them here, just so full of just raw emotion. I think that's what set that series apart. Anything?
Absolutely. No, there's no question about that.
Let's talk. You mentioned old wounds. One I want to talk about right before that is if you're so smart, why aren't you rich?
you hit on my other favorite episode.
You referenced this before as one of your favorites, I know. But tell our listeners why. How did you see this as sort of a pivotal episode for Dick Grayson?
Well, when they first started writing the Dick Grayson Robin character, he was very much a sidekick. You know, he would just take orders from Batman, and he was really just kind of a college kid who, you know, part time was a superhero or superhero wannabe, I guess. And then with that episode, he's pivotal in solving the problem. He figures out the maze. He figures out how to get them out. And if it wasn't for him, disaster. Same thing with Sub-Zero, which I love, because Robin is very pivotal in saving Batman in that. And usually it's the other way around. You know, Batman is saving Robin, who's a little hot-headed and gets involved too quickly, you know, in situations. But starting with If You're So Smart, Why Aren't You Rich? And then Sub-Zero, and then into Nightwing, he became his own man and his own superhero.
Yeah, you very much see a transition. You meant that episode, too, the Riddler episode. It almost harkens back to the old TV series with Burt Ward, because he was always, like, figuring out the Riddler's riddles, too, on that. Did you get a sense of that when you were doing it? It was like, he's like, pick the C key, and then there was, like, Burt Ward was always figuring out stuff that Adam West wasn't figuring out.
And when people say, sometimes they come up to the table and they say, can you do the Robin voice for my, they come up to the table with their kids, you know, the people who watched it originally, they're all in their 30s or late 20s, and now they've got kids, and they bring the kid up to the table, and they don't necessarily understand, you know, that there's an actor behind that cartoon doing the voice. So they say, would you mind doing the voice for my son or my daughter? And then I do the voice, and their eyes, you know, become like saucers, because they're like, oh my God, it is you. It is, you are the one doing it. But I always, the one line I always say to them, because they seem to say a line, I always say this, and I never said this in any of the episodes, but I think it's a great line. I say, Batman, it isn't a joke. It's a riddle. We're not looking for the Joker. We're looking for the Riddler. because that's very much Burt Ward, you know, you're absolutely right. That's the kind of thing he'd say.
That's exactly what I'm hearing. It just almost sounds like you're channeling that. It's amazing, because we get a lot of different versions of Dick Grayson coming in here. It's just so fun to listen to you to do that. Robin's Reckoning, one of my personal favorites. And look, the Emmy winning episode, Robin's Reckoning. A little bit about that. Again, another transitional episode, because it's not, like I said, we start with a college-age Robin, college-age Dick Grayson, but this really goes back. Mm-hmm. We get that origin story that we were kind of missing.
Yes, and I was really flattered when I got those scripts. It was a two-parter, and I read it, and I said, you have to have a lot of confidence in your actor if you're gonna go into that kind of depth. And they hadn't really gone into that much depth with him at that point. And so I was very flattered, and I said, okay, they have confidence in me that I can do this. And I really appreciated that. And it was, you know, up to that point, the best written script I'd received for that character.
You mentioned Old Wounds as well, too, another standout episode.
Yes.
When you got the script for Old Wounds, first of all, what did you think? And then what conversations did you have with Kevin Conroy? Because this real, especially that scene where, you know, you pretty much take down the Batman.
Well, Kevin and I didn't really discuss the scenes beforehand. We would just do them. And I think that was part of the magic is that, you know, he has a big theater background. I have a big theater background. Mark has a big theater background. So just the doing of it was enough to say, oh, I see where you're going. I see what you're doing with this. And then you bounce off of each other that way. We didn't really have big in-depth conversations like method actors about how we're going to approach the scenes. But okay. Old Wounds, I loved because it gave me the chance to be Robin and Nightwing in the same episode.
Yeah. Do you recall that, you know, voicing that scene where Dick Grayson punches out, you know, or Robin punches out Batman? Because, I mean, that had to be, because we've never seen that. I mean, Burt Ward never punched out Adam West.
That's for right.
Sure. There's nothing to channel there.
No, it was a very dramatic moment. Just reading it was a very dramatic moment, and I knew that it was going to be it was going to play like that on when it was finished. So I was very eager to do that scene because as an actor, you really want stuff you can sink your teeth into, and so that's what happened. We really got into that scene.
A lot more emotion for the character of Dick Grayson in Sub-Zero. You mentioned written by Randy Rogel, who he also wrote Robin's
yeah.
Reckoning. So, I mean, he's done pretty well by he's given you some great scripts.
Oh yeah.
Some fantastic.
I just saw him. We just had a retirement party for the great Alan Burnett, who was in charge of Warner Brothers Animation. And, I saw Randy there. I hadn't seen him in a long time and we had a great reunion.
What were your memories of Sub-Zero? Because this is, put it in context for us too. It was supposed to be released in tandem with the Batman and Robin movie with Arnold Schwarzenegger as Mr. Freeze. There was supposed to be this whole Batgirl Mr. Freeze thing, and then that movie didn't do so well. So what do you remember
right.
about that time? Because it got shelved for like a year, didn't it?
Well, to be honest with you, things took so long.
Mm.
It would take 6 months to get the episodes back. I think they sent them to Korea mm-hmm. for the animation. If I'm not mistaken, or somewhere, they sent somewhere overseas. And so six months later, you've completely forgotten what you did until you see it. And you say, oh yeah, I remember that episode. So, things took so long. It really didn't hit me at the time. Like, oh, is that movie ever coming out? And I just remember what a wonderful experience doing that because the script was so good and I had so much to do. I had so much, such a great gamut of emotions, and it was just terrific.
A romance.
I loved that's and a romance. Yes,
yes you got to do romantic scenes.
Which
yeah.
is, have you seen Batman and Harley Quinn yet?
I haven't seen Batman. I'm looking for. I want to see it for the first time in the theater. I know we've
great.
Got August 14th. That's how I want to experience it for the first time. So I'm looking forward to that. So you can kind of compare the two, just the experience that you had with both of them.
Well, I the thing is the romance angle and, there is a romance. I can't say what it is. I don't want to give no spoilers here, but, there is a romance that Nightwing gets to get involved with. And like you said, the romance is Sub-Zero, anything that gives yet another dimension to these characters have a lot of dimensions, but anything that gives them another dimension. It's terrific. And one more thing about Sub-Zero was Michael Ancera was just so wonderful.
Yeah.
Not just as an actor, but to work with. He was just terrific.
Well, and I think up until the Christopher Nolan films, Mask of the Phantasm and Sub-Zero, those were like the two highest rated, well-received Batman movies of all time on like Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, isn't that great?
Yeah, and it's just like you watch these things and they're so amazing. It's just... when you first saw Sub-Zero put together, because obviously you say, you know, I record the dialogue and then it could be forever later. And then you've probably done like
mm-hmm.
30 episodes of stuff in between those two.
Right.
Did you get to like see it? Like, did they send it to you? Did you watch it somewhere? Was it a premiere somewhere? Do you remember seeing it all put together and going, oh, whoa, I didn't know all that happened?
I don't remember if they had a like a premiere or something. I don't think they did. If they did, I don't remember it.
Because I know it was direct to video, so that's why I didn't know if they did something special for the actors or anything.
That's what I loved about Batman and Harley Quinn is that they made a really big deal about the you know, at San Diego Comic Con. I just came back from there, and they made a big deal about it, and it was really appreciated that. You know, about 1,000 people were there for the screening, and we had about 4 or 5 hours of press junkets, and it was given the kind of respect that I think it deserved.
Well, that's what I want to ask you about. I mean, did you get to watch the film Batman and Harley Quinn along with the audience?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. And I couldn't wait for that moment because the script is very funny. It's got more laughs in it than
you've
ever
seen. I've
heard
there's more comedy in this. Yeah, Bruce Timm coming back to writing Batman after being away for quite a while. So,
it is very funny.
Funny and Batman. So, Batman funny or everyone around Batman funny?
Batman's biggest laughs are his deadpan reactions. So it is kind of Batman funny because he is the cool head, of course, as he always is. The cool head prevails, but the dialogue is very funny. And when I read it and recorded it, I knew where we were going to get big laughs. But then to hear the audience laugh in places that I didn't know were that big of a laugh, that was really exciting. That's why I love theater so much, is because that's always a discovery. Every night when you're doing a comedy on stage, they tend to laugh at the same things, but very often they'll laugh at different things and really surprise you.
Yeah, you're in such a vacuum with voice acting, especially these days, and especially the video games. I mean, there's no way you can get any kind of sense of, did that work? You're trusting the person behind the glass to give you
right,
a thumbs up.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, let's talk as much as you can about Batman and Harley Quinn. We've got, you know, obviously the theatrical premiere coming up. We've got home video on August 29th. Talk about the latest actress to voice Harley Quinn, Melissa Rauch. Did you get to record with anybody, or was it all in a vacuum?
It was hit and miss.
Okay,
hit and miss. I can't really talk about that. Yeah,
yeah.
But I think she did a terrific job. I think she's wonderful. I of course have great soft spots for Arlene Sorkin and for Tara Strong, but you know, I think she did a terrific, terrific job and was extremely well received by the audience.
Are there aspects of those, because you mentioned two of the greats, Arlene Sorkin, I had a chance to talk to her recently, and Arlene Sorkin and Tara Strong. Was Melissa able to take some of that and then twist it into her own? I mean, are there some elements that are very recognizable as Harley, or is this just a brand new Harley?
No, I think she really captured what had been created, you know, absolutely spot on. I think brought the Harley that everybody wanted to see.
Is this the Nightwing, like the I've got a grudge against Batman Nightwing, or is there a little bit more camaraderie? Like, which kind of Nightwing are we getting here? What point in his?
Oh no, they're equal partners in this movie, and that's what I love. It picks up where the show left off. When last we saw Batman and Nightwing, previously on Batman, when last we saw them, they had, you know, kind of came to a begrudging partnership. Now it's a full partnership. They're getting along very well. But there are moments when Batman puts Nightwing in his place with just a look, and you know, as Batman deserves to do, he's still the boss, you know. But for the most part, they are working in tandem together.
So there's almost an element of don't get too cocky, kid.
Yes.
Do you and Conroy? I mean, is it, you just pick up like you left off yesterday? Is that the relationship you guys have?
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, when I started doing the Comic-Cons a couple of years ago, I hadn't seen him for a while. And when I saw him, it was just like we were, yesterday when we were doing, you know, the series. It really felt like that and always feels like that. And then we got to do, last year, we got to do the first time working together again as Batman and Robin on a virtual reality game for ViewMaster. And when we went in to record for that, it was really like no time had passed. Andrea directed that.
Oh,
and
wow.
We just walked into the studio and it was, I haven't seen you for a couple of weeks. And it's been years.
Wow.
You know?
You guys got the band back together again. That's fantastic.
Oh, absolutely.
Everybody loves Nightwing. This character, it's just, but they've never had an animated series. Do you think this film might open the door to a possible Nightwing animated series?
Oh, I sure hope so, because that was the rumor back when they canceled, I forget what it was called the second time. Was it called The Adventures of Batman and Robin? Yeah. The reason I'm not sure is because they changed it a couple of times. So I don't know what it was finally called. But I think the new Batman Adventures was the last version where I was Nightwing. And when that ended, first of all, I was very disappointed because I felt the character had further to go. He was continuing to evolve. And then there was a rumor that there was going to be a Nightwing series at that time. But then there was also a rumor that there was going to be a Catwoman series. And I don't think either one happened. Here years later, with I think a live action Nightwing probably going to happen, sometimes these things fall apart, but it sounds like it's really going to happen. I think there'll be renewed interest in an animated series with Nightwing, and I would hope that I would be playing the part.
Good thing.
Because people tell me this all the time, and it's always very humbling when they say it, but I'm also very proud of it. They say, "You are the definitive Dick Grayson." When I read the comic books, I hear your voice. Even when I see other iterations of the story, I think of you and I hear your voice. So I think the fans really would like to see me in that part, but it's Hollywood, and who knows what's going to happen.
Yeah, but you're in the room with these guys. I mean, you're recording. Bruce Timm's probably there. I mean, you've got all the folks from Warner and DC. Like, do you ever just like okay, and cut? Do you ever just like walk over and tap them on the shoulder and go, hey, what about a night? Like, have you ever broached that topic, or is it just like is it like a pitcher pitching a shutout? You don't say anything to him. You don't touch anything. You don't.
I don't think it would be very cool to do that. I think actors. No, I think there are actors who would do that and maybe have great results or backfiring results. I don't know what the results would be. It's just not who I am. I like to socialize with the people I work with, but I'm not a great schmoozer. I don't like to schmooze people, and I think the actors who do that, some of them are very successful at it, and bravo to them. But that's just not me.
It's just so obvious that you have such a passion for this character, and the fans love this character. And it's just insane that he doesn't have his own series, or at least up to this point. So, hopefully this movie will kick that door down, and we'll get to hear you behind the mic again.
Thank you for putting that out in the universe. Because the more that that's out in the universe,
I'm not the only one.
Well, thank you.
I'm not the only one. We want this, and we want you voicing it. Before we close shop today, I got to ask you about two other superheroes real quick. Iron Fist and Green Lantern. You got to bring both of those characters to life. Do you, Marvel and DC Universe, do you have a preference of either of those? Do you?
Well, that was really, that was so much fun to be able to do those other characters. My heart will always be with Nightwing, so therefore my heart will always be with DC. But I can tell you that when I did Iron Fist, this is one of those things where people are always asking, what kind of background work did you do? This is a part that I really researched, really, really researched, and came up with this fantastic voice. I had auditioned for that. They didn't just offer that to me. I had auditioned for that just like everybody else. And because he'd studied in the Far East and had come back, I thought there would be sort of traces of that in his voice. And I did all this backstory research, and I auditioned, and I got the part. And I was like, oh, wow, that's great. So I went in to record, and we recorded a few lines from the script, and then suddenly the producers, I could see them all talking and the director all back there and didn't know what they're talking about. So there's this long period where I was just talking to my fellow actors next to me, a lot of people who I'd worked with before. And then suddenly they stopped. They stopped talking, and they looked out through the glass. And I know what was going on, you know. And then finally they came in over the intercom, and they said, hey, Lauren, can you try Iron Fist in just your regular speaking voice? So I had done all of this work and had booked it because I created this unique voice. I never would have booked it if I'd used my own voice.
Yeah.
But once they got into the this is a you know, classic showbiz story. Once we got into the studio, everything changed.
Yeah,
and they liked my regular voice more, and so that's why Iron Fist sounds a lot like me.
I was going to say, you were telling that story, and I thought he sounds a lot like him. But yeah, okay. Can you give us do you remember a little bit of like what you thought it was going to be?
Oh gosh, no. I mean, I would need a line of.
Because you're talking to Luke Cage, and like, you know, your Heroes for Hire, and you know, I think the one was the Ant-Man. Like, you were trying to rescue Ant-Man.
Yeah, I think it was more something like, of course, we're going to see Ant-Man. I have no idea. I don't know.
It was almost like a spiritual, like kind of a deep. Deep
yes,
spiritual,
yes,
yeah.
Yes, no, precisely.
Nice.
Yes.
Okay.
Very spiritual. Yeah.
Oh, see, I want to hear that take on. Well, again, you know, Hollywood. And as Hal Jordan, you got to recite the oath. I mean,
Yes.
I know we all love Nightwing. We all love Robin. But as an actor, I mean, as a geek, you got to say the oath. How cool was that?
No, that was cool, and I remember when Andrea Romano told me that I was going to be when I was being called in for Brave and the Bold. I didn't know anything about the show, and assumed that I was coming back to do Nightwing, right? Mm-hmm. And so when I was told that I was going to play the Green Lantern, she called me and she said, "And you get to say the Green Lantern oath," and I said, "Oh man, I'm in."
Hairs on the back of your neck standing up.
Oh yeah.
Well, like, I mean, I'm going to put you on the spot, but I mean, do you remember it?
In brightest day, in blackest night, no evil shall escape my sight. Let those who worship evil's might beware of my power. Green Lantern's light.
Nailed it. Oh man.
Nailed it.
One take, Lester, man. Oh, that is awesome. I love the fact that you did. Thank you. I mean, I love that you brought him to life. Very cool. You mentioned the comic conventions. You're doing them now. You're going to be out and about. 25th anniversary Batman the Animated Series. A bunch of these are with Kevin Conroy, as you mentioned. Where can we see you? Looks like several Wizard World. You got the list? I got the list here if you want me to run a few down.
That would be great because I at this point I can't keep them straight anymore. I know that I'm coming up on Chicago. I'm very excited about that.
Chi-Town.
Yes.
You're going into the Windy City. Nashville.
Yeah, I've never been to a Comic-Con there, so I'm very excited.
Oh, really?
I've been to the city many times. I love it. But
you got a lot of deep dish pizza. You get, you know, just a lot of carbs. I'm just telling you, Chicago is a lot of carbs. Nashville, again, more carbs. Southern food. September 8th through the 10th. You got Grand Rapids coming up in October. You've got Oklahoma City in October. You've got Austin in November. Man, you're going to be everywhere. How can we find out the whole list and where you're going to be? Website, social media, give it to us.
Yeah, come visit me at laurenlester.com. Easy to remember. And that's a list of all the cons coming up. And there's clips from a lot of my on-camera stuff there that people can see. And a lot of interesting, fun stuff. So visit me at laurenlester.com. Follow me at ActorLL, which is both my Facebook fan page and my Twitter.
Batman and Harley Quinn, that's coming up. The Orville's coming up this September. Probably your episodes either in September or October, so we're going to look for that. Man, I'm telling you what, happy 25th anniversary again for Batman, the animated series. Batman and Nightwing together again, probably coming to a city near you. We cannot wait to see you together. Thank you so much for originating this role of Nightwing for us, and thank you so much for joining me today on Comic Book Central.
Oh, it was a real pleasure, Joe. Thank you so much.
Again, this Monday, August 14th, great flick coming your way. Batman and Harley Quinn in theaters, one night only, fathomevents.com. That's where you go to find out more. And be sure to download the digital film the next day, or you can snag the DVD and Blu-ray August 29th. My thanks to Lauren Lester for joining me here in the Lair today. Links to Lauren's website and his social media pages, they can be found. You know where they can be found. They're in the show notes for this episode of my website, comicbookcentral.net. Links to Comic Book Central on social media, they can be found there on the website. So check it out. Facebook, facebook.com/comicbookcentralnetwork. Twitter @comicbookctrl. You can also find a link on the website to iTunes. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. I highly suggest that. If you do, please leave a review. If you're not subscribed, you could miss those Terrificon chats that are headed your way. So much more goodness coming at you. Cincinnati Comic Expo, that's going to be coming up as well, too. So, and of course, any of the past episodes you might have missed, they're all out there. Batman himself, Kevin Conroy, he's dropped by the Lair a couple of times here on Comic Book Central. So check out those episodes if you missed them. And don't forget to share the Lair on social media every week. Share those posts on Facebook. Retweet them on Twitter. And I want to hear from you as well. Don't forget to drop me a line. Tell me what's on your mind. Joe@comicbookcentral.net, or you can click that Signal Me tab on the website, or you can even leave a voicemail message for me at the website. Love to hear from you. All right, Bat fans, it has been a blast rocking with the Robins. My thanks to Burt Ward and Lauren Lester for joining me this week for back-to-back Boy Wonders on Comic Book Central. And as I said, I'm hitting the road, so no new episode next week. While I'm at Terrificon, I'm going to be recording content, moderating Q&As, having all kinds of terrific fun at Terrificon. If you're there, be sure to stop by and say hi. Always love meeting the listeners. Comic Book Central will return August 26th, and it's time for some Marvel action. From Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., actor Brett Dalton, he's going to be here. Make sure you're here as well. Subscribe to the show on iTunes. Subscribe. Make sure you join us here in the Lair each and every week. Until then, try not to chafe when you're sliding down the bat pole. Keep reading those comics. And thanks for joining me here in the Lair. Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. This podcast is intended for entertainment and education purposes only. All original content in this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivations, 3.0 imported license. All of the content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of their respective holders.
Look! Smoke! Let's get out of here! Ow!
Don't go out that door!
It's barbecue!
You might let in poisonous gases. Stuff something under the door. And stay low. That way you avoid the heat and gases that rise upward. Remember, if a fire breaks out in your home, always test the door first. If it's hot, find another exit or yell for help.
Now we know.
And knowing is half the battle.
G.I. Joe!